baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Whit Merrifield will join the Jays at Rogers Center next week against Cleveland, despite all the talk and panic and concern from Jays fans. Alek Manoah continues to be the stud of this starting rotation, and I've got a wild idea I wanted to float to you listeners and you, Adam, just to see where you feel about it. Trade deadline came and went. We're 3 days after the deadline, and we're going to kind of touch base on how you and I are feeling about it. Mitch White, newly acquired in that deadline, looks like he's going to make his Blue Jays debut tomorrow. So we'll deep dive into his stats and talk about where he fits on the team. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. There's been a lot of talk about him this season and maybe not performing as well as some of us were hoping, but my God, the man is about as hot as they come. So we'll dig into his 13-game hit streak and we'll let that gold glove chatter heat up here on the walk-off. Ricky Tiedemann, one of the Blue Jays' top prospects, gets the call to Double A. He's going to start with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats today. We'll talk that. Chapman versus Jose Ramirez. I wanted to just do a quick comparison there of the two. Baltimore, the Orioles. Yes, a lot of O's fans were a little disappointed that they were sellers at the deadline, but they are in great shape. So we want to kind of take a look ahead at what the Baltimore Orioles could look like in 2023. And we're going to end the show talking Shohei. Was he close to being traded? And what did the Angels want for him to be moved? Let's get into it. Hello and welcome everybody to the walk-off. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. And buddy, we had one heck of an experience on Tuesday live streaming that trade deadline.
7.5 hours, we grinded it out.
We grinded it out. You were a real champ, by the way. I was only able to join for about 4.5 hours, and Adam really had the at the helm of the ship, if you will.
It was the walk-off and friends. We had some great visitors join us, so it was not as hard as
Craig Ballard. We had Baseball Jen join us. We had Garth Yorgi. Of course, not the real Garth Yorgi, but that's his pseudo-name that he goes by. It was great. It was honestly...
We had Joel. Just, don't forget Joel. We had Hey Commie.
I would never forget Hey Commie. All I was right. going to show love, of course.
All right, save it.
And on top of that all, man, we had almost 500 people following us at a time. Like, it was really kind of cool to have that much interaction. And I know that the channel grew almost 100 subscribers. And I've had DMs on Twitter being like, I just found you guys. That was great. So, yeah, thanks to everyone who joined us. I know we even had some donations.
Some significant contributions to the computer fund.
Some significant. Exactly.
So we are, let's just talk about this right now. We are fundraising with a target of $1,485.67. That is a quote we have to upgrade our computer system, which will in turn upgrade the quality and the quantity of the content we bring to you. And as of today, our fundraising is at $708.85. So we are at 47.7% of the way.
Unreal.
So very cool. We brought humbling this up, for sure.
Very humbling. We brought this up 10 days ago and you guys have really jumped in both feet. So love to see it. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast, on Instagram, the Walk Off Podcast. Our Discord grows literally every single day. And I think people are a little blown away when they join and they're like, oh my God, you can literally talk Blue Jays and baseball here 24/7.
Yeah. No, the Discord's great. Kinda... The new Bad Taco design that we've picked, we have also turned into an emoji that is usable in the Discord. So feel free to hop on that bandwagon. A lot of fun.
Absolutely. And of course, we're going to have some merch available for pre-order here shortly, working on that as we've got
One thing that, you know, we should put a call out for is, I mean, let us know, I guess, in the comments on this video what people would be interested in, because obviously we don't want to water it down with like 1,000 different varieties 100%. And whatever. You'll get to pick your size and whatever, but like if you do want a t-shirt, let us know if you want the dirty walk-off white, or if you want a Blue Jays blue, or if you want a coffee mug. I know Jen mentioned that she wanted that Bad Taco on some socks that she can wear to the gym.
Yeah.
So, like, I haven't even thought of most of these ideas. So, I mean, you give us the feedback. Only let us know if you actually seriously want to get it, because these are going to be small batch orders and stuff.
Yeah.
But let us know if you want a shirt or a coffee mug or some socks or something else, and let us know.
And just for all of you who are newer to the channel, for those of you who don't know, Bad Taco is kind of the slang that we use instead of injuries. We don't want to be blamed for any kind of Bad Taco situation, if you will. Right. And we're a little superstitious ourselves and don't want to test the baseball gods. So that's kind of a term that's been a part of the walk-off community for over a year now. And so we threw out a call to all of our artist friends in the walk-off community, and we had a bunch of submissions. Some of them are hilarious.
Some of them are definitely from non-artist friends.
Yeah, not some of them we would not put on a shirt, but pretty funny stuff. So you can even check that out in Discord. To join Discord, by the way, that's really easy. There's a link in the show notes, and you can go from there. We'll give our shout-out to our Patreon. Of course, we really appreciate you, and we're going to get right into this show. Adam, if you want to go through the list of those Patreon members.
Sure. Patreon.com/walkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you access to all of our premium behind the scenes, other bonus content. And shout out to David, Abraham, Michael, Sarah, John, Simon, Rashid, Joshua, Jeremy, Ian, Dunedin, Bob. I can't do it on one breath anymore. John, Wyatt, and now Patrick, who joined during the trade deadline live stream. So big thank you.
Very
there.
Cool. That list is getting longer.
We do baseball movie reviews from Bull Durham, Mr. Baseball, Major League, Moneyball, and more. This week, Scott and I are going to sit down and record Battered Bastards of Baseball, which you can watch for free on Netflix. We have early access to all of our interviews that go up day of, unedited. We run contests for this Jose Barrios jersey, for an example. Men's extra large. All you got to do is send us a DM on Patreon and let us know why you would like that jersey and you're in to win. Plus, we are donating 5% of all of our Patreon money to the Jays Care Foundation.
Yes.
So giving a little bit back that way. And then, we are saving up for this
computer
to upgrade our system. And once we do that, Scott and I have talked about starting more frequent content. So keep an eye out for daily live streams once we get our rig up and running.
That's the big thing, is that this new rig is going to allow us to, without chugging along and it being very difficult, to live stream a lot more stuff. So that's something to look forward to. All right, let's get into it, because we have a ton to talk about. And I'm excited about today's show. Let's start with Whit Merrifield will join the Jays at Rogers Center next week against Cleveland, despite all the talk and panic and concern from Jays fans. Alek Manoah continues to be the stud of this starting rotation, and I've got a wild idea I wanted to float to you listeners and you, Adam, just to see where you feel about it. Trade deadline came and went. We're 3 days after the deadline, and we're going to kind of touch base on how you and I are feeling about it. Mitch White, newly acquired in that deadline, looks like he's going to make his Blue Jays debut tomorrow. So we'll deep dive into his stats and talk about where he fits on the team. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. There's been a lot of talk about him this season, and maybe not performing as well as some of us were hoping, but my God, the man is about as hot as they come. So we'll dig into his 13-game hit streak, and we'll let that Gold Glove chatter heat up here on the walk-off. Ricky Tiedemann, one of the Blue Jays' top prospects, gets the call to Double-A. He's going to start with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats today. We'll talk that. Chapman versus Jose Ramirez. I wanted to just do a quick comparison there of the two. Baltimore, the Orioles. Yes, a lot of O's fans were a little disappointed that they were sellers at the deadline, but they are in great shape. So we want to kind of take a look ahead at what the Baltimore Orioles could look like in 2023. And we're going to end the show talking Shohei. Was he close to being traded? And what did the Angels want for him to be moved? Let's get into it. Whit Merrifield. Buddy, watching the start of that Blue Jays game yesterday where Hazel May had an interview with him. And it was funny because the front office of this Blue Jays, Ross Atkins, did not wish to come out and actually say he was vaccinated. He left it up to Merrifield and his family as to how they wanted to announce it, as to what they were going to do. Of course, all of the rumors, and we know this front office pretty well, the idea that they didn't do their due diligence in this deal seems a little silly. And then it came out yesterday, he's already vaccinated. Not only is he already vaccinated, he's not going to miss one game in Toronto. He's going to be there next Friday when they play the Guardians. I mean, to the point where I'm almost like, is this tampering? Right? Like, obviously, they probably touched base with him before this deal was made. Nobody cares it's tampering because it's Whit Merrifield, but I just mean if there was a similar scenario with Juan Soto, you got to believe that opposing general managers would probably be complaining to the commissioner right now. He's not missing a game.
Okay, so I got to just address this right off the top. I saw the same press conference with Ross Atkins too, where he's like, yeah, we just acquired him. We'll get to all those details later. I don't think Ross Atkins knew he was vaccinated. I think this is I think this is totally just a fell into a happy bonus. Like, I think it was a total panic move, like last minute. They got him. I still think it's probably going to work out. But if he was vaccinated, why wouldn't they have just said that? Save it for his family to reveal. Like, he's not coming out as homosexual. We're not outing someone for like a personal choice. If he got vaccinated, you just go, yeah, he got vaccinated like a week ago. That's fine. We're good.
Yeah, you're right, but there are laws in place where workers do not need to divulge. Listen, I know, Adam, all right?
But well, then He should have just said, well, whatever, HIPAA violations prevent me from commenting on someone's medical status or whatever.
But Ross Atkins is the king of lawyer speak. Like, you need to really read between the lines. I think he knew. I'm going to disagree with you on this one. Right. I think he knew he was vaccinated. But either way, it is irrelevant. All of this panic and all of this duress amongst the fans that what if Merrifield is only going to play road games, that is not the case. I mean, even when Hazel asked him yesterday straight up, I don't think she actually said, are you vaccinated? But she's like, are you going to be able to play in Toronto? So he knows what the question is. And he's like, yes. In fact, I'm not even going to miss a game. I'll be there. He didn't sound happy about it. I don't think he wanted to get vaccinated. But who knows, right? I mean, if it was his family he was worried about, his family doesn't need to get vaccinated. They can come into the country, isolate for 14 days. Heck, he can probably throw them a good old party, right? You know, yeah. Maybe Rogers was like, here's 10 grand. Have a little 2-week party, right? You can pretty much do anything for that. I mean, I'm poor, so 10 grand to me over 2 weeks. I mean, that's
infinity
a lot of,
dollars, right?
That's infinity dollars. That's a lot of beer and weed.
Yes. Yes. Here, Whit, go buy your kids some weed. It's legal in Canada.
I think that is good news, obviously.
Of course it's good news.
Of course it is, right?
I mean, Jen coined the term dimwit Merrifield. Yeah. I'm still going with that. I think that's a great nickname, regardless of your stance on anything. Some nicknames are just solid nicknames. So dimwit Merrifield, welcome to the Blue Jays.
Listen, he had his first hit as a Blue Jay yesterday, got a couple RBIs, he scored a run. He looks good in that 8-hole.
Look, this is a guy elite base runner, undersells his abilities on the base path. He is a bit older now, right? So
yeah, 33, late bloomer.
You know, but this is a guy who's led the league in hits before. Like, the ceiling with Whit Merrifield is there, mm-hmm. right? He's definitely not performing that way this year. But like he's playing for the Royals, right?
And obviously, professional athletes are expected to look past this and are expected to perform at peak, no matter what's going on around them. But let's face it, playing for the Royals over the last 5 years, where they have literally been terrible every year, once in Whit Merrifield's tenure with the Royals, did they consider themselves buyers at the trade deadline and still fell out of it right away. So I think that he's pretty motivated to be with a contender. Whatever you feel about his decisions beforehand and the whole vaccination ball of wax and all that shit, he's a good ball player, and he is going to be a good piece for this team.
Just looking at his contract. So he is under contract for this year, next year, and then has a, I believe, a team option for the third year. That team option is $18 million, whereas this year the Jays are going to be on the hook for another probably $3 million, and next year is $6.5 million. Okay. He's not
getting then they'll buy him out. Yeah, then they'll buy him out.
Yeah. He's not getting the option. So year and a half of Whit Merrifield.
I think it's a good fit. It's a good utility guy. He's a dude who can play center field. Again, his speed is blazing. He's probably the true base-stealing threat on this team. Not that you don't see guys like Kevin Biggio swipe a bag or Bo Bichette swipe a bag, but, I mean, his acumen, Merrifield's acumen, is far above anyone else on this team. I forget what exactly it was, but I think it was last year he had over 40 steals. Either way, It is one of his skill sets that really fits in well with this team, especially when you look at John Schneider and how aggressive he has been with this team on the base path. They definitely have taken a step in an aggressive manner in comparison to what Montoyo was doing. So, fits in well. Anything else to add on him? Because I want to get into Alek Manoah.
Just to clarify, his stolen base is 34 in 2017, he led the American League. 45 in 2018, he led the American League. And 40 in 2021, he led the American League. So
he's got the ability to do it. He can swipe a bag.
He's got 15 this year, only caught 3 times. And he was doing that in Kansas City. So we'll see. With a new, freshly motivated green light, We'll see what he can do in the second half here.
So Alek Manoah gets another win yesterday. 6 more quality innings of work. The man has been about as dominant as you can possibly wish out of a 24-year-old. Since he was called up last year, he has been the best pitcher on this team, and he continues to progress. He continues to get better. There's always all this. Listen, 24 years old. The youth is there, and he is under contract, or under team control, I should say, until 2027. This is all good news for this organization and for Blue Jays fans in general. But my question here is, and listen, maybe this isn't the approach, but there is all this talk about how do the Blue Jays extend Vladdy Guerrero? How do they extend Bo Bichette? When should they do it? I know there were a lot of fans, myself included, that were even kind of on that train last offseason that maybe this front office should have been pushing for a Vladdy extension. Do you think maybe the true move here isn't necessarily to extend Vladdy and Bo? That maybe what the front office should be doing is trying to lock Manoah up long term. Now, when I say this, by the way, I'm not saying that you need to pick one or the other. Obviously, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. But I just mean maybe they let them get to free agency or a year or two out before they really, kind of the Aaron Judge way of of doing things, right? Where the Yankees, you know, let Aaron Judge do his thing and then really the made low a push ball this off
that last year.
Yeah, yeah, low ball him with a $250 million offer.
Well,
yeah.
Hey, poor according Aaron to him, Judge. It's a low ball. Well, so yeah, we'll see. He's going to put up 85 home runs this year.
I mean, Juan Soto turned down $440 million, so I guess you're right. In comparison, I guess his $250 he turned down is a low ball. But what do you think of that? I mean, obviously, extending any sort of pitcher when they're young like this is very dangerous because pitchers do get injured. Tommy John is always a concern, and you look at what happened with the Washington Nationals and Steven Strasburg. That's a cautionary tale. However, big-bodied dude, right? Loves to take the ball. He's already putting up innings like he hasn't seen. Do you want to maybe see if this is a dude who would take a 10-year, $200 million deal? That eats a lot of his arbitration time. Like, again, he's not a free agent until 2027, so it might be attractive to him. Yes, he could make more money if he waits for free agency, but think about that $20 million a year he's making when normally, I mean, what's he making this year? $725,000 or something like that? He's not even ARB eligible for 2 years. So maybe this is the way for this front office to get him to sign a deal that, you know, in 2027, he'd want a Gerrit Cole contract. But maybe you can give him less per year eating some of these.
Well, so you want to just, to make the math simpler, I know that's why everybody comes to the walk-off is for their math lessons. But let's go with your example just as a starting off point for a discussion. $200 million over 10 years that buys out the last 5 years of his team control, essentially,
yes,
under arbitration, right? What would he get through those arbitration years?
So for the next 2 million? Years, right? I doubt that much. It would be incremental increase. So I would say, I'm guessing, by the way, but sure. You get an increase in your non-ARB years, but it's very minimal, and it's already kind of set. Each team has their number that they do. And some of you might even remember Alek Manoah turned down the, I think it was only a $6,000 raise, but he turned it down, and that gives him a foot to stand on come arbitration where he can say, listen, I didn't ever agree to what the Blue Jays thought I was worth, and maybe he can get a bump up that way. But let's just say it's the regular amount. So I think he's making around $750,000.
So, okay, I got Sport Track pulled up right now.
Okay, perfect.
Spo Track. I always call it Sport Track. Never mind the ad down here in the corner. So he's making $730,000 this year. And then he has two more years of team control pre-arbitration. Yes. And then 3 years of arbitration before he's a free agent at age 30. So five
incremental
full years.
Increases. Yeah. 5 full years. The next 2 years, he's probably going to make right around that $750,000.
What do you think he makes in year one of arbitration? We could even just go average for those 3 years of arbitration. Let's go like best case scenario for Alek Manoah, right? Let's say we're Alek Manoah or his agent, and we are trying to reason out a realistic contract. So let's say we're betting on ourselves. Let's say he wins a Cy Young next year, goes into arbitration and has that little piece on his mantle to say, hey, this is why I deserve whatever. How much do we think he gets over those 3 years on average?
Obviously, there's not a direct comparable, but let's use Vladdy. Okay, sure. So Vladdy's last year was incredible. He got a bump up to $8 million. So let's say first year of ARB, he makes $8 million. Let's say 12 in year two. Let's say all the way up to 20 in year three.
Okay, so that's $40 million. Plus the $2 million that he's going to make under team control now. Okay, that puts us to $42 million. So
these are high bets, too. These are high bets.
Totally high bets. Yes. So what we're essentially doing is buying out the next 5 years and then giving him a $158 million extension for 5 extra years. So 158 over 5. From the age 30 on, right? From 2028 as a free agent on. So that's not unrealistic to go 158 divided by those 5 years. That's $31.6 million a year.
Mm-hmm. It might be the move, man.
Might be the move. I mean, he is going to be, I mean, relative to what the MLB finds sexy nowadays, he's going to be not a young free agent, right? He's not going to be a 27-year-old free agent pitcher. Like, he's going to be on the wrong side of 30.
Yeah, he'll be.
It'll be just 30.
Yeah, just 30, but.
I don't know. It's. Does he think he can get $150 million-plus at age 30? I think he probably still could. But like you said, you're eliminating all that risk of injury in the meantime for him to worry about. I think $200 million over 10 years this offseason, maybe
it's doable.
Maybe not that far off the mark. I mean, I think he at least sits down at the table.
Yeah.
And hears them out.
And who knows? We both know Shapiro and Atkins, this isn't really the way they operate.
No.
They're more likely to try and lock him up come arb years if they do anything. You know, who knows? We might watch Vladdy and Bo go to free agency. We don't know what's happening behind the scenes, but it sure hasn't seemed like there's been a lot of extension talk. So maybe that's just the way this front office operates, and maybe that's why they valued these high-end prospects they have so much and didn't move anybody at the trade deadline. Speaking of trade deadline, did you have anything to add on Alek Manoah or any thoughts on that before we move on here?
I think he's pretty good. That's my expert analysis.
I will second that thought. Thank you for that expert analysis.
Alek Manoah is, and I'll show you here, in the MLB, so this is MLB-wide, he's fifth in ERA with 2.45. And his whip, I believe, is top five as well.
Very impressive.
His whip is under one.
What's his innings pitched at this year?
He's at 132.
So he very well could pitch almost 200 innings this year. He takes the ball every 5 days. Like, this is a stud.
And
he wants the ball.
So Alek Manoah is sixth in the MLB in innings pitched. 132. He's a third of an inning behind Fried with 132 and a third. Webb has 135, Aaron Nola has 138, and Mikolas has 138. And then there's a massive jump up to Sandy Alcantara with the Marlins, who has 158 innings pitched already.
Wow.
What a massive leap.
Unreal.
Unreal is right.
Yeah, very cool. I sure wouldn't be opposed to seeing Alek Manoah in a Blue Jays uniform for the next decade, I'll tell you that much. Okay, let's get into the trade deadline here. Okay. 3 days have passed. Obviously, there's a lot to unpack here. So I do want to know what you think about this. And I just want to start here with saying, I like the moves the Blue Jays made. Shrewd moves. This is almost a little bit of a... I just want to cover my bases here and make sure that everyone knows everything I'm about to say. I am not knocking Anthony Bass. He's a top 20 reliever in MLB according to the numbers this year. I like the guy. I think he fits in very well in this bullpen. Zach Pop is a great acquisition. Okay, this is a dude who's probably a little bit lower down the depth chart, isn't a high leverage guy this year, but he is under control for maybe as much as 5 years. Probably 4 years. There's a lot to like about his stuff, and he averages 97 miles an hour. He's one of the highest velo guys in this bullpen, and he's got a good slider, and this team loves that slider fastball combo, so he could maybe be a Jordan Romano type high leverage reliever a year or two down the road. What's not to like about that? Mitchell White, same thing, right? This is a dude who plugs into a hole here where they needed that long man slash starting depth, and that's exactly what they got out of an organization who is known for their pitching acumen and their ability to develop pitchers with the Los Angeles Dodgers. I mean, that's where we got Ross Stripling from, and there are a lot of comparables to Ross Stripling. Whit Merrifield covers a lot of the depth needs in the field, especially with the injury problems that Springer has gone through. I'm saying all of this so that I can say I wanted more. I'm not, I don't, like, and I don't want people to be like, because it's so funny on Twitter right now. It's like there's two sides. There's no gray area. And I want this gray area to be acknowledged, that I can like the moves that they did and still wish that they went out and got a high velo, high strikeout, 14 Ks per nine type of back end reliever. Obviously, the prices were high, but that doesn't mean that I still don't want that guy. I think that that's the one piece that they kind of missed out on. Who? I don't even know. A David Bednar sure would have been freaking cool, though. How are you feeling?
I mean, underwhelmed has to be
yeah.
one of the words used to describe. I think we speak for everybody when we say that. Yeah, I mean, we got out from Jordan Groshans. I think the consensus is that he was a prospect on the decline, right? Every year he went down the MLB's top 100 prospects list. Moved on from him. We moved on from Max Castillo. Some people struggling to understand that move, as he seemed to be our only depth at AAA. Otherwise, we didn't really
give up much. Samad Taylor, I love Samad. Like, he came on the podcast. He was a great chat. In fact, we'll even try to have him back maybe in the off season. Him and Zach Logue are guys that are friends of the show that I think it would be cool to see. What was it like being traded? What was the new organization like? I think that's something cool that we could do. But let's be honest about Samad Taylor. There is no way that this team was going to add him to the 40-man roster, and there's no way another organization would have taken him, wouldn't have taken him in the Rule 5 draft. So you're moving a guy that at least you're getting something in return for.
That's a great point.
He was gone anyways.
Great point.
Right?
Great point. yeah, I mean, it sucks that we didn't get a starting pitcher. I don't know what the final result is going to be on Ross Stripling's sore butt.
Yeah.
How many games is he going to miss? I don't know.
How well does Mitch White fill in?
Listen, how many more comebackers does Alek Manoah take off the elbow?
Good Lord, enough, hey. Right? Yesterday, I was just like, no, what's happening? Hey, two in a row?
Serious question, and I know this is not likely to happen, maybe, but also I don't think it's a 0% chance. Do you think there's any chance that the MLB, in an effort to increase player safety, ever goes to some sort of a pitching screen? Or is that too... I just, like, you never would have expected the NHL to demand players wear helmets 60 yeah. years ago. And they started wearing helmets, right? And then visors. You know, like, player safety is a concern. Is a pitching screen too far? Probably, yeah. But, like, probably. At some point, you know, like I watch the NFL and they do all these rule changes to protect quarterbacks because the league is better when there's good quarterbacks. And I feel like the pitcher is the quarterback of the MLB. Like, you don't want guys going, maybe it just doesn't happen often enough to make that drastic of a change. But, like, whether it's a comebacker or, I don't know, it's just, they're so exposed and they're so vulnerable in that, like, delivery position, and a comebacker is so fast. Like,
yeah,
you know,
no, it's a really good question, man. I personally, just my gut feeling right now, doing zero research or looking into it at all, I think there's no way MLB goes that route, but I think it is something that they, you know, do need to consider is the health of their players. And my goodness, it sure freaks me out watching Alek Manoah take line drives off his body.
Yeah, right? Or, like, I mean, you see it all the time across the MLB. A guy gets it off the like a guy gets it off the ankle, a guy gets it off the arm. Like, you know, thank God we haven't seen anybody take it in the face in some years, right?
But yeah.
Like, it's not, I don't know.
But we have seen it. Right?
We have, like, seen it. And
comebackers off the head and face happen.
So, I don't know. I mean, again, I'm not saying I think this is what they should do, but, like, I could see it happening. Like, maybe not the full pitching screen that we see, like, during batting practice at Little League games, but, like, something, and maybe you just go, if the ball hits the screen, it's just a dead ball. Everybody advances one base, you know. So, I don't know.
O'Neill Cruz, who is the stud prospect, 6'7" with the Pittsburgh Pirates, just broke the MLB's record for exit velo, and he hit a ball 131 miles per hour.
That's death if it hits you in the head.
I was just going to say that. If that hits someone in the head, they are dead. So as exit velo continues to increase and becomes such a sought-after tool, maybe we do see something like that. I mean, we're talking years down the road, personally. I haven't even heard this up. I've never heard anyone talk about this before.
They'd probably go to some sort of a helmet system before they went to a pitching screen.
Yes, exactly.
Whatever. Anyway, sorry. This just popped into my head. And
we did completely derail what we're talking about here. But yeah.
Where were we? Trade deadline.
Like, again, honestly, these were shrewd moves. These were very Atkin-like moves. I totally see all the potential in these guys. And these are moves that in 2023 we could be saying about, oh my goodness, did we ever fleece the Dodgers for Mitch White? These are moves where we're like, I can't believe we've got Zach Pop, one of the best relievers in all of baseball, for a song and a dance, right?
Yep.
Not to put down Jordan Groshans, by the way. Right. But I just mean, like, you know, prospects are prospects, and until they make the majors and make an impact, we'll call it a song and a dance. So there is a lot to like about what they did, but I just feel like they were missing one impact move, one move that helped this team right now. Forget about the future, and I know you can't look at it in that way, but, you know.
Did you I'm not saying this is an impact move, but like one move that is available right now to be made. I don't know if you opened up Discord at all yesterday, but if you did for any period of time, you probably saw an ongoing discussion about Jackie Bradley Jr.
JBJ. Yes, I did.
I mean, felt like that conversation happened 7 different times.
Yes.
What's your real thoughts on Jackie Bradley Jr.? Because for me, I would way rather Jackie Bradley Jr. over Bradley Zimmer.
I feel the same way. It's an interesting little scenario here. Jackie Bradley Jr. is owed, I think his salary was like $10 million this year.
Yeah, it'd be another like $3.5 million over the rest of the year.
But that's the type of guy I'd love to see come in.
He's a World Series champion. He's got playoff experience. Former Gold Glove winner, so he's no slouch. I mean,
he's
old.
Arm on him.
He's older, he's right? Old.
Yeah,
but
what is he, 35?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Left-handed bat, though.
Yeah.
You know, Bradley Zimmer's hitting like 100 right now.
Yes.
Jackie Bradley Jr. hitting like 220, 230. So not like lighting the world on fire at the plate, but like twice as good. Doubling.
Yeah. And one thing to keep in mind too, Adam, is that JBJ is a very streaky hitter. So when he's hot, he is so much better than anything Bradley Zimmer can bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, when he's cold, he's Bradley Zimmer.
Well, I think even when he's cold, he's better than Bradley Zimmer. Like Bradley Zimmer, what does he do? He plays the ninth inning in the outfield, and he pinch runs on occasion. He has two stolen bases. Like, he doesn't contribute anything offensively, though.
No.
I don't know. I see ourselves in a need where a pinch hit left bat happens to come up more often than a pinch running situation.
Yes.
And I think
It's an interesting thought. I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Not an original one. I know that was talked about a lot yesterday, but I do think, I mean, if we're just going to raise the floor of the team, because that was the theme of the trade deadline, so that's why I'm bringing it up, right? Is we didn't increase the ceiling anywhere, but we raised the floor up, right? We got rid of
a lot.
We got rid of Anthony Banda, and we got rid of, you know, like these type of moves. We're going to see Trevor Richards less, right? So this is an opportunity to just never see Bradley Zimmer again, and all it's going to cost us is money. Seems like a no-brainer to me, but what do I know?
I'm all for it. I think the best thing that could happen to this team, and I know it's been talked about a little bit, especially over the beginning of the season, because we were expecting so much out of Vladdy this year. I know both of us kind of, I think we took the over on 50 home runs from Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Probably
this season.
Something like that, yeah.
And, you know, he's probably going to be much closer to 30, 35. Vladdy, though, is hot right now. Like, 2021 hot. Like, the best hitter in baseball hot. I know that from the last... So he's in the middle of a 13-game hit streak. I've got his... Sorry. Just pulling up his...
Okay.
So 13-game hit streak. In that 13 games... He's hit .431 with an on-base percentage of .491, almost .500, and a slugging of .627 in 57 plate appearances. The guy is lighting the world on fire, and there is no bigger boost to this Toronto Blue Jays team than Vladdy at his peak. Peak Vlad is better than anything we could have added at the trade deadline. But this isn't just 13 games, is it, Adam? You can go back further, and Vladdy has been...
Quite a bit
much
further.
More himself.
So let's I had it pulled up and now it's gone. My computer can't keep 10 tabs open in the background. So as soon as I open up a second thing, it's like, okay, well, we'll just refresh it the next time he looks at it. And that's what's happened here. So just let me stall for a few minutes while I...
We swear we're working on it, folks. This is why we're putting all of our Patreon money towards a new computer.
Exactly. Okay. So dating back to July 3rd, he is hitting, so this is basically the last month, he's hitting .391 with a slugging percentage of .553 and OPS of .944.
Unreal.
Slugging percentage, by the way, of, sorry, I lost it now. Slugging percentage of .553, and he only has 3 home runs in the last month. Mm-hmm. So getting a lot of doubles, getting a lot of action out there, some good extra base hits.
I was surprised to see Vladdy hit his 25th double last night. Yeah. Vladdy could hit 40 doubles this year.
He's got 11 doubles since July 3rd.
Wow.
So, the kid's got wheels, man. Big Diesel, run hard. Let me tell you.
That aggressive approach, John Schneider, love to see it. Makes things interesting, that's for sure.
22 home runs. For Vladdy on the season, or is it 23 now? Mm-hmm. 22 home 22.
Runs. Yeah.
Jordan Romano, 25 saves.
It is so funny. So for those of you who are new to the channel, Adam and I had, we were joking. We're like, what do you think? Will Romano have more saves this year or Vladdy more home runs? And wow, it is a much closer race than we could have possibly imagined. You know, a little bit of a down year power-wise for Vladdy and an extremely great year when it comes to saves for Romano. I mean, he leads the AL in saves.
He's third in the entire major league behind only Rogers and Hader in saves.
Yeah.
So.
Very, very impressive. Very, very impressive. And this is where I kind of was like, you know, if we could have had a... Jordan Romano light added to this bullpen, it sure would have been nice. Nothing against Anthony Bass, by the way. Like, I just want to really instill in everyone listening that when I say I wanted more, this isn't a shot at Bass. I think he was an absolutely awesome acquisition. But Anthony Bass isn't a guy that in game 7 of the ALCS with one out, bottom of the 8th in a tie game, runner on third base, where you desperately need a... strikeout. Forget about the ground ball. Forget about the pop flies. You need a strikeout. Do you jump the gun? Do you go to Jordan Romano? That might be the only real option where we have a high strikeout guy. There aren't a lot of them in this pen. So that's all I'm saying when I say I wanted that high Ks per nine dude for just that type of situation.
I just want to throw out some numbers here that are kind of catching my eye, okay, when it comes to Jordan Romano. Because, I mean, the easy comparison when you're talking about, is Jordan Romano elite, is he not? You know, you look at guys like Josh Hader, right? That's the...
Yes.
the peak of the peak, as good as it gets, right? How does he rank relative to Hader? So here's some numbers that kind of caught my eye. Obviously, Hader has more saves, right? That's the big, sexy number that you know, we're going to talk about. Oh, well, Hader had six extra saves at the end of the season, so he's better, okay? If we look at ERA, earned run average, Jordan Romano's ERA is 2.5. Guess what Josh Hader's is?
I know he's gotten blown up a couple times here. What, 3.5?
It's 4.11.
Wow.
Very high, okay? If we look at, and some people are going to say, well, ERA isn't really like a relief stat. More important numbers like whip and opponent batting average.
Which is true.
Yeah, which is true. So Josh Hader, very impressive opponent's batting average, 198.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Romano, very close. Guess what it is?
206.
196. It's better.
Oh, wow. Than Hader. It's better.
Yeah. And you're thinking, well, what's the whip? Jordan Romano, 1.06. Josh Hader, 1.09.
Wow. Very
good.
So
Romano has better numbers in whip and opponent batting average. And you're thinking, yeah, but Jordan Romano struggles with a long ball sometimes, right? He's prone to give up a home run. Well, he's given up 4 home runs. Josh Hader's given up 7.
Mm-hmm. 3 of them in one inning, which is part of why his ERA sure, is so blowing up. But still, hey, numbers count. They all count the same. Like, you can't, as much as we love to do this in baseball, where we're like, if you just ignore May, then, you know.
Right,
like,
exactly, right? You know. Eliminate this category. Eliminate that. I'm just saying, like, other than saves, like, yeah, saves, Hader has 29, Romano has 25. But if you look at ERA, edge to Romano. If you look at opponent batting average, edge to Romano. If you look at whip, edge to Romano. If you look at home runs given up, edge to Romano.
He's elite.
He's elite. I mean, Hader has more strikeouts. It's 60 to 44 is the competition there when it comes to strikeouts. That's a big deal. That's one thing that Romano has been missing from his game this year.
Mm-hmm. It's one thing this Blue Jays bullpen has lacked
collectively.
Altogether.
You're absolutely right.
So again, I just want to reiterate, when I say that I wanted that high K per nine guy, it's nothing against Jordan Romano, who has been absolutely incredible this year. It's nothing about the acquisition of Anthony Bass. I just wanted a little more.
Yep.
Call me a greedy pig. It's fine.
All right.
While we're talking about trade acquisitions, I did want to really quickly talk Mitch White. I think this was a very shrewd, under-the-radar move that is going to pay off in the long term for the Blue Jays. I mean, we're going to get a look at him tomorrow. Obviously, Ross Stripling goes to the IL, and that means Mitch White is going to get a chance to make a couple starts for this team. He fits in well with what the Blue Jays needed, which was some starting pitching depth and a guy who could be a long dude in the pen. And a lot of this had to do with Kikuchi was a question mark. Stripling gets called up to be strictly a starter, where they kind of had him envisioned in that long man role. So they're really, other than Trent Thornton, who I really don't want to see get a lot of work over the next 2 months as they continue to press for this top wildcard spot and home field advantage in the playoffs. Mitch White, fingers crossed, no bad tacos, all the knocking on the wood that Ross Stripling is a very quick stint on the IL and only misses 2 starts. That's the dream. Mitch White fits in really well in this bullpen. He's done it before. Again, that Dodgers organization is just a pitching farm.
Yep.
They just have a way of developing really good pitching. I think he's going to work out really well for this team. What's his numbers look like there, Adam?
Well, he's got 56 inning pitched through 15 games, so he has been kind of a Ross Stripling-type hybrid where he's pitching out of the bullpen, but he's making a couple spot starts, doing some longer outings out of the bullpen. His ERA is 3.7 right now, so I mean, we'll take that over Yusei Kikuchi, right? he's got a whip of 1.25, so not the best. Mm-hmm. walks per nine is a little higher than you'd like. It's 3.1, and his strikeouts per nine is a little lower than you'd like at 7.6. So
25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Under control for 3 years. He really does kind of fit the mold of the sort of value acquisition that this front office is known for. And I think Blue Jays fans are going to be very happy with Mitch White. Again, we can't knock the guys they got. I just wanted a little more. I cannot stress that enough, but who knows? I hope I eat these words. I hope the Blue Jays win the World Series and all of you can dogpile on me and be like, aren't you glad you didn't give up all those prospects now, Scott? And I'll be like, yes, I am. Thank you. Throw it in my face. I love it. I invite it. But I don't know, man. You look at what some of these top teams did. You know, you look at the Padres. You look at the Yankees. You look at the Astros.
All we can do is hold on to those 2021 Atlanta Braves and go.
Yes.
Just need to get there.
They did it. Yeah.
Just need to get there. I mean, do we have enough to beat the Yankees in a 7-game series? I don't know. Do we have enough to beat the Yankees in a 4-game series? Yeah, if the cards fall our way,
mm-hmm.
I could see us jumping up early on those Yankees and finishing an early series at home and a big upset. I don't think that's the craziest thing in the world.
The 7-game series is what scares me. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's pitching Alec Manoah 3 times against the New York Yankees in a week and a half. Yikes. But?
Big game pitchers are born for scenarios like that.
Yes, sir. He's earning that $200 million.
Okay, right. Before we are going to start wrapping the show up here shortly. Before we do that, I did wish to really quickly touch on a couple things. Number one, all the J-Ram talk that went on over the last 18 months. And then we watched the Guardians obviously lock him up long-term and all the rumors that he was headed to Toronto. And I think that even once the Guardians signed him, that even the front office was kind of like, I wish we had just given in last trade deadline and given the Guardians what they wanted. But the other option they had, which was Matt Chapman, is working out incredibly well. And I did wish to just do a quick little comparison. Obviously, Matt Chapman struggled out of the gate, as a lot of players do in a new scene. Right? Like, this is a new team, new city, new scenarios, new way of being coached. So let's take a look at the comparisons. Third base since May 27th. Jose Ramirez is sitting with a .342 on base percentage, an OPS of .867, 9 home runs, 37 RBIs, and a wins above replacement of 2.0. Matt Chapman exceeds this in almost every way.
He's got the same time period?
Same time period since May 27th. Matt Chapman has an on-base percentage of .360, an OPS of .929, 12 home runs, 37 RBIs, and a 2.2 wins above replacement. As if that's not enough, listen to some of these defensive metrics. So, outs above average is the defensive metric where most defensive guys are judged on.
Okay.
So the Toronto defense has improved massively since last year. So just as a team on the infield, they had a -2 outs above replacement or outs above average. Just throwing in the word replacement there for no reason, but outs above average. Not very good. This year, they're +16. They're third best in MLB. Now, Yes, the metrics don't necessarily like Matt Chapman, but there is improvement right across the board. Shortstop with Bo, both Cavan and Espinal have been phenomenal at second base, and Vladdy has seen an increase. And a lot of this, in my opinion, lies on the shoulders of Matt Chapman. He has so much range that it allows Bo to rein in what he's doing. It also, we talked about Biggio, we talked about Espinal, right? They were at third base, not natural third baseman. Biggio especially struggled at that position and have moved to second where they're comfortable and been so much better. And that is solely on the rock that is Matt Chapman at third base. And then, of course, we've watched Vladdy take another step forward. He always struggled last year. We talk about this all the time. The running back catching the ball shoulder over – or
the basket
ball
catch.
Over his shoulder. Yeah. The basket catch over his shoulder. He made a stretch last night that was absolutely unreal where Chapman just fired it across the diamond and the wound up at a full split. But that's the nice thing with Chapman, right? Vladdy can do these splits and do these acrobatics to catch the ball, but it's not like last year where he was needing to catch bouncing in the dirt balls,
stretch
right?
And
like,
dig it out at the same time is a lot harder.
Like when,
than,
when yeah. Chappie's throwing it, that is, there's no bouncing going on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. It's a good point. I mean, Espinal, I think, was very serviceable at third base last year. He is an average third baseman and an all-star second baseman. Like, that is the proof is in the pudding.
Absolutely.
Biggio is a below-average third baseman and an above-average second baseman. So, yeah, that is a substantial increase just by moving those two off a third. Defensive metrics are a tough measure. I know they don't look good for Chapman this year. I think he's still, like... I don't think anybody is looking at Matt Chapman and going, like, oh, it's too bad we don't have the good defensive version of Matt Chapman. Like,
yeah. No, I agree.
Okay, yeah, I could go on and on about Matt Chapman. So, anyways.
Okay, last Blue Jay thing to touch on before we move on to the Baltimore Orioles is Ricky Tiedemann, the Blue Jays' number two prospect, 19-year-old pitching phenom. This is a dude who started the year in Dunedin at low A. He got the call up to Vancouver, played with the Canadians, and he just got called up to Double A yesterday. He's making his first start with the Fisher Cats in New Hampshire today. So congrats to Ricky Tiedemann. And you know what? This is a guy that very well could have been traded at the deadline. There were a lot of teams that wanted him, and maybe part of the reason why there wasn't that more that I've been screaming for here in the bullpen or even just starting pitching at is that the only way to do it was to move him. Well, he's 19 and he's getting a start at Double A.
Yeah, I mean, we could go on and on about Tiedemann. Mitch Bannon, Sports Illustrated, when he was on the show a couple weeks ago, he said, I think Tiedemann makes his MLB debut next year.
Which is wild.
Which is wild.
He's 19. Like, you don't see 20-year-olds make MLB debuts, but he has done nothing but mow down every opponent that he's had. His numbers look phenomenal, and Adam's going to prove that right now.
Sure, we got stats for you. So his combined ERA through Dunedin and Vancouver this year is 2.13. His whip across both is 8.72. So well under one.
And think about that. As a 19-year-old, some of the biggest problems these kids have as a starting pitcher is walks. And he is giving up less than one walk and one hit an inning. It's unreal.
So his walks are the only blemish on his record that I can look at right now. And it's not even that bad. We're really nitpicking warts here. But he's got walks per nine of 3.3, which could be
which
better.
Does go to show you how few hits he's giving up to have such a sparkling whip.
And I think the reason he gives up so few hits is his strikeouts per nine, 13.7.
Wow.
So that'll play.
I missed that when I was looking at his stats. That is incredibly impressive.
That is that swing and miss talent that you're looking for. Reason not to trade a guy right there. So we'll see what he can do at Double A. I mean, I think
this is the biggest jump for
this,
most
I was
pitchers.
Just going to say, am I wrong about this? This is the biggest jump going from single A to Double A rather than, well, other than maybe Triple A to the MLB. I think that's a pretty substantial jump. But in their minor league development. Because look, he's going to be thrown against guys like Aurelvis Martinez now. Right? Like there are legit prospects in Double A that he's going to be pitching against now. So
I don't mean to put you on the spot here, and maybe this is too tough to figure out in this amount of time. Okay. At 19 years old, is he one of the youngest guys in all of Double A? I'm guessing he's got to be one of the youngest dudes even playing Double A.
Probably. I don't even know where I'd begin to look that up.
We can look this up another time. Absolutely. Absolutely. But 19 is so freaking young. So good on Ricky Tiedemann. A big congrats to him. Hopefully he kicks butt in double A. And boy, would it be cool to watch him get the call up to triple A before the end of the season.
It'd be nice. Look, if he rakes at double A, maybe he just gets like one start at triple A at the end of the year. But I don't know. Maybe that just is like not going to do anything for his development other than potentially be too much and set him back. Like maybe the team just wants to go into the off season like on a high note and not like great at double A and then got blown up at triple A.
Well, it's so rare to see a guy go through all four levels of low A, high A, double A, and triple A in one season. So it would be cool if he pulls that off. But you're right. I think probably the best developmental move is to leave him at double A and then start him at triple A next year. Which is one area where this team, and we've talked about this before, that insular depth at AAA is pretty low. So having a guy like Tiedemann to call on when things get bad, I'm all for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's move away from the Blue Jays. Before we wrap this up, I do really quickly want to touch on the Baltimore Orioles, who are having an incredible season. They are doing so much better than I think anyone expected them to do. They're still above 500. Now, there was a lot of, what's the best way to put it, disappointment, I would say, amongst O's fans that they did wind up being a seller at the deadline. Very smart. I do think that was the right move by this front office, was to get assets back for Jorge Lopez. They're very good closing pitcher. I think it was good that they moved on from Mancini. All the best in Houston. But man, 2023 offseason is going to be so interesting to see what happens. So the Baltimore Orioles really could, and I'm bringing this up because Adam, in the offseason, you floated the idea of Carlos Correa to the Orioles because of how much money they have. But I'm not saying they're a rich franchise. I'm saying they don't have very much money on the books right now. What is their payroll at for this year? Do you have that up?
Their payroll for this year is dead last in the MLB. They're at $24 million for payroll. That's $11 million less than the tight-pocketed Oakland Athletics.
Wow.
$24 million. Not much.
So they go into the offseason, an above 500 team. I mean, they're probably going to dip below 500, but you know what? There's got to be a lot of feel goods going on amongst this young core.
Look, yeah, if you, like, they're three games above 500 right now. I'm correct about that, right? If you told anyone in this fan base or in this organization that a week into August we're going to be above 500, that's a fucking parade getting scheduled, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, regardless of like whether they go on a cold streak or whatever to end the year and they end the game a couple games below 500 or not, like this year is a massive achievement for this team. So, a lot of reason to be optimistic for next year.
Baltimore has spent big before. Yes, the Chris Davis contract is still an albatross, but it does show that they do have a willingness, that ownership does have a willingness to spend large on a superstar player. And obviously there's a player opt-out for Carlos Correa at the end of this season. One of the reasons I think that he signed that three-year odd deal with the Twins is so that he could go back into free agency this year when the shortstop class wasn't quite as solid as it was in 2021. I mean, we've talked about this lots, right? That shortstop class might be one of the best to ever hit the market in MLB history. So he can opt out with the Twins, and Carlos Correa at 28 years old would probably fit in really well with this Baltimore Orioles team. He's already got that winning acumen. He has a World Series ring. He came up through that young system in Houston. He's been there and done it before. This Baltimore team is on the verge of turning a corner here. Their starting pitching has been much better than anyone thought it possible.
I do believe there are front office ties as well in Baltimore. I believe part of my reasoning for throwing Baltimore out as a dark horse to sign him in the offseason this year was that I'd have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure that the GM or the president of the Orioles today was the president or GM of the Astros when Correa was drafted.
Yes, there was a tie there. I forget exactly what it was.
I don't remember that exactly, but it was something along those lines where someone in a position of power with the Orioles today was in the same position with the Astros when they drafted Correa. So whoever's running the Orioles liked Correa 10 years ago. I think he'd fit nicely. Can you imagine the Baltimore Orioles with Carlos Correa and Aaron Judge? Like, if they're just like, yeah, we're going to spend $100 million and we're going to go get Jacob DeGrom, Aaron Judge, and Carlos Correa, and we're going to win the AL East next year. That'd be insane.
That would be insane. God, I hope that doesn't happen. But no, Carlos Correa would be a nice fit on the Orioles. Yeah. Okay, let's end on Shohei Ohtani. I did just really want to touch on a fact that I read an article in The Athletic today just talking about how close was Shohei Ohtani to being traded. The answer to that, not close at all. The owner, Moreno, refused to even hear many offers, and it was said that the Padres did make an offer very similar to the Juan Soto offer with a lot of the same prospects, which is really interesting that maybe Ohtani was more sought after than Juan Soto, which is a wild, wild thought considering Ohtani has 1.5 years of control compared to Soto's 2.5 years of control. But makes a little bit of sense too. Shohei Ohtani is basically two players, right? He's the best DH in the league and one of the top pitchers in baseball. The fact that the Angels weren't listening almost at all is so mind-blowing to me. But, I mean, what this article was saying is how much money the Angels make on the back end through Ohtani's merch, stuff like that.
Yeah, I suppose. Very lucrative. It's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out.
Isn't it?
Fascinating. Like,
I wonder if they think if they walk this back a little bit and decide maybe come the offseason they should move him.
I don't know, man.
Every podcast we have a moment we're like shaking our heads at the Angels with a question of like, what are they doing? What is the plan here? Because I don't know. But no, definitely interesting to see how the Shohei Ohtani saga ends in Los Angeles.
Everyone. The kid's very good.
So good.
Before we wrap this up, I just want to do my YouTuber due diligence here and send a call out for likes on this video. Our stats show that we'll get like 800 views on this video today. And most of them will click off right away. They'll go, no, I don't like these two. Fuck those guys. And they'll click off. But then we'll have like 300 people that watch right to the end. Mm-hmm. And then we get like 25 likes. So if we just gave you an hour and 5 minutes of your time and it was good enough to watch this far, I think it's good enough for a like. It actually, believe it or not, I know it's cliche, but it really does help the channel. It helps YouTube believe in us and our content and puts us through the algorithm in front of more eyes, which then leads to more growth and more and better contacts and interviews. So if you want to support the channel, I know it's a cliche, but if you could fucking throw us a like and subscribe, share us on Reddit, whatever you do. But like the simplest, lowest hanging fruit is just to like the video. 10% of you are doing that and we appreciate it. And I know that's kind of pretty standard for YouTube in general. Most people watch and never like any videos. But if you just watch for the last hour and 6 minutes, a like is, I think, the least you could do in return. So thank you so much.
Really love this walk-off community. Thank you to all who are a member of it. We do truly appreciate it. You can, of course, join the Discord for free. It's always free to go in there and chat with close to 200 other pretty rabid Blue Jays fans. The link is going to be in the show notes. You can follow us on Twitter. We're almost at 1,100 followers on Twitter, Adam. Cool. We're getting up there. That's
you're kicking my butt on Instagram. On Instagram, we're at like 700, so...
We were very close. We were very close for a while, and then I really kind of...
You're the Jordan Romano of this social media. Yes. You're running away with this lead.
So. we are on Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast. Help Adam out and follow him along. He's far behind here, so we need some help there. Thank you again, everybody, for spending an hour with us. All the best. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! With a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.